Good morning on this 12th of Never Day. My name is Michael McCusker. It seems that a reprehensible breed of political rodents are reluctant to abandon a sinking ship of state, while the deposed pariah captain attempts to poison the very sea it is sinking into, while overhead a COVID hurricane gusts across a diseased sky. Today's program salutes war veterans who rallied against the dishonorable war they fought in, and about an anti-war veteran who almost became president, but was instead swift-voted by the same malignant breed of political rodents on that disgraced floundering ship. I wrote it and named it from Thomas Paine, Winter Soldiers. The war to end all wars ended yesterday, 102 years ago, on November 11th, 1918, amidst a raging worldwide pandemic, most likely caused by the war, and which killed perhaps 10 times as many human beings than the war. For many years after the war, every armistice day that ended the slaughter at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month was commemorated by millions around the world who gave a minute of silence to honor the dead of World War I. Armistice simply means a cessation, a truce, not an end, just an interruption, which ended 20 years later when newer generations grew up to continue hostilities with an incredibly larger war. World War II superseded the Armistice Day ritual of silence, and after that war was ended by two atomic bombs, the USA, which had fought in both wars, changed its emphasis from mourning war's cost to honoring war service to the state. Veterans Day as a national recruiting poster to the war god Mars. Yet despite the annual ritual of homage to our heroes, and that's a quote, the Vietnam War half a century ago revitalized war as tragedy rather than heroic patriotism, and veterans were vital to their regenesis. Five American presidents tried to keep the Vietnam War from upsetting the citizenry. They promised guns and butter while taking the USA's sons and money to fight and bankroll the war. They lied about the war from the beginning. Night after night, the American public was numbed to the war by the artifice of television news, yet few ever saw any of their war dead. The sight of dead or wounded Americans was considered bad for morale on the home folks. Death was edited out of the war, at least American dead. The real irony, however, was that the war was specifically measured on body counts of dead Vietnamese. Another specious duplicity was that the veterans, not the five presidents who fostered and perpetuated the war for nearly two decades, who were castigated as responsible for the ensuing debacle of the war's loss. Not the disastrous policies or failed strategies of the pompous politicians and military geniuses. The draftees and enlisted swine lost Vietnam as a result of their in-country addictions to heroin and alcohol, which defeated their fighting spirit and corrupted their obedience to superior officers. That was the mantra and the legend. A small but significant number of Vietnam veterans began to oppose the war and organized to stop it, which triggered a pro-war military political jihad. The unequivocal purpose of Vietnam veterans against the war was to end the war and bring American troops home from overseas. To that end, VVAW, held two war crimes inquiries to publicly make clear the war's deception, criminal abandonment of so-called rules of warfare that were more or less agreed upon over centuries, and especially the wanton decimation of Vietnamese as a people. By the mandate of Nuremberg, military men and women are required to speak out against war crimes and other forms of injustice and wrongdoing within the military. It is usually impossible to do so without isolation and punishment while in uniform, and the majority within VVAW waited until they were free of the military before speaking out, though quite a few active duty vets were heartened by VVAW and also attested to atrocities committed in Vietnam. For most of the veterans, it was the first time they had publicly recounted their Vietnam experiences. And for nearly all of them, it was their first chance to listen to the experiences of others who had done virtually identical carnage in country. Every experience of everyone talking was deja vu to every other vet, as if each and every burnt and sacked village and hamlet were named deja vu, whether Doc Toll or My Lai. It was the first time the whole 10-year puzzle pieced itself together for each of them, most of whom had spent not much more than a year in Vietnam, less for the badly wounded and maimed. The most important factor was the redundancy, the same genocidal pattern linked by men whose service in Vietnam, 1-year tours of duty, spanned the period of American involvement. But no one else seemed to listen. The news media, for the most part, embargoed the veterans' testimony. What coverage they received generally referred to them as alleged veterans, though all of them presented documents of legitimacy. Detractors who attended the hearings called the vets phonies, cowards, and traitors. The Pentagon denied their accusations and placed the burden of proof as well as guilt as specific war criminals on the vets themselves, as though they were pariahs rather than cogs in a huge killing machine mandated by genocidal policy. Oregon U.S. Senator Mark Hatfield defied criticism and had the Winter Soldier testimonies inserted into the congressional record. In the larger measure, the veterans had been the nation's agents, the final instruments of American foreign policy, in a dirty, unpopular, and unsuccessful war, and were, as a result, treated as dirt. Vietnam Veterans Against the War started as a banner carried by six vets during a huge anti-war protest at the Pentagon in the fall of 1967. The first public evidence of VVAW was a newspaper ad signed by 40 Vietnam veterans who opposed the war. That same year, 1968, many anti-war vets joined the Eugene McCarthy for President campaign, from which grew a national register of vets who later joined the VVAW after McCarthy's defeat and Robert Kennedy's assassination, which led to the ferocious war hawk presidency of Richard Nixon. After a year of organizing around the USA, VVAW became actively involved in a nationwide college and university strike against the war in the spring of 1970. At Portland State University in Oregon, Vietnam vets acted as medics and inadvertently became focus of the strike when tax squad police charged to destroy their ersatz hospital and attacked defenders with clubs. That summer, a coalition of Northwest anti-war groups that mirthfully labeled itself the People's Army Jamboree challenged the American Legion at its annual national convention that was held in Portland that year. The protest was spearheaded by veterans of the local chapter of the VVAW. Soldiers and veterans then, as now, were used as agitprop against anti-war sentiment hardly any acknowledgement of veterans opposing the Vietnam War was made publicly in the USA until the VVAW Vanguard protest against the Exalted American Legion 50 years ago in Portland. National media found the contrast irresistible. A newer era of anti-war veterans counterposed to stalwartly pro-war veterans of an earlier era, which at the time seemed unprecedented. Life magazine, yet in its prime, ran a full-page color photograph of an American Legionnaire wearing the traditional cap sitting next to a bearded ex-Army medic member of VVAW to confirm the contrariety. A week later, an East Coast contingent of VVAW vets marched from Morristown, New Jersey to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, feigning search and destroy assaults in cities and towns along the way, which became famous as a unique form of guerrilla theater. The vets, armed with plastic toy M16 rifles, pretended to assault actors staged among each village and towns, gawking citizens in the manner of real search and destroy operations in Vietnam. Following fast behind the grunts in every city were other VVAW vets who passed out leaflets to everybody in sight, explaining, "A U.S. infantry company just came through here. If you had been Vietnamese, we might have burned your house. We might have shot your dog. We might have shot you. We might have raped your wife and daughter. We might have turned you over to your government. We might have done all of these to you and your whole town." Two of America's most hallowed institutions were involved in these actions, the American Legion in Portland and Valley Forge in Pennsylvania. The VVAW staged its big spectacle in the spring of 1971 in Washington, D.C. More than 1,000 Vietnam veterans from all over the USA converged on a public park in front of the U.S. Capitol and bivouacked for a week despite a Supreme Court ban. They invaded Congress with demands to end the war, which was by then in its 10th year, from President JFK's dispatch of advisors to South Vietnamese Army forces in 1961. They staged their guerrilla theater search and destroy mock assaults all over the city every day. Initially shut out of Arlington National Cemetery, they were allowed in the next day to pay respects. President Richard Nixon denied they were veterans, then walked it back after the vets proved to media and law enforcement they were indeed who they claimed to be. Ordered off the mall by the Supreme Court, they refused to retreat, which inspired newspaper headlines such as "Vets Overrule Supreme Court." Several hundred active duty soldiers standing riot duty in Washington, many of whom were Vietnam vets, threatened to join VVAW vets if their units were mobilized against them. On the last day of occupation, more than 1,000 Vietnam veterans, many of whom were not VVAW members, threw their war medals over an ad hoc fence at the Capitol steps. One active duty Army lieutenant showed up to add the decorations of several officers, including his commanding colonel. A former commandant of the U.S. Marine Corps, David M. Shoup, who won a Medal of Honor during World War II, made the official announcement of the VVAW invasion and occupation of Washington, D.C. a month earlier. Mothers and widows added the war medals of their dead sons and husbands. After the last medal was hurled, a janitor swept them into a coffin-shaped rectangle. A toy rifle and a helmet were placed at its head. Overnight, VVAW became national heroes. From then on, VVAW was acknowledged as a respected, loyal opposition by a majority of Americans, whether they supported or opposed the Vietnam War. None of VVAW's demands toward ending the war were directly met, nor were they really expected to be. The day after VVAW formally decamped from its protest, more than 500,000 people marched against the war in Washington, D.C., almost exactly the body count of Americans serving in Vietnam. Several thousand marched against the war simultaneously in San Francisco. Then came May Day, in which demonstrators from every state attempted to shut down Washington, D.C.'s federal functions. Hundreds were arrested and penned up at sports stadiums, such as happens in South American countries. It has been considered the largest mass arrest in U.S. history. Among the arrested that day were 20 members of VVAW who spent their brief jail visit in a federal prison in Arlington, Virginia, across the Potomac River from Washington. These 20 Vietnam veterans penetrated police and military defenses around the Pentagon and hurled little grenade-sized plastic bags of freshly gathered chicken manure at the front steps of the Pentagon as horrified military officers, secretaries, and other assorted personnel scrambled in panic to all get at once inside a very narrow door as the little bags splat on the porch. Police and soldiers they had evaded on their march to the Pentagon caught up with the vets just as they exhausted their ammunition. Formal arrest was made by FBI agents. The charge, as one of the VVAW vets articulated, was for foul defecation distribution. And you could spell foul either way. The last early VVAW actions of national prominence were occupation of the Statue of Liberty by New York vets in 1972 and participation that summer at the Republican National Convention, which nominated Nixon for a second term, which he won, but later resigned the presidency in disgrace. By then, the government decided to judicially destroy the VVAW and prosecuted VVAW vets who were at the GOP convention, muzzling all publicity that might assist their case. But as it turned out, the government depended on its own agents provocateur as witnesses against the vets. The jury promptly acquitted the defendants. VVAW did a number of other activities associated with veterans. It provided help for war wounded and traumatized vets who had no one else they felt they could trust. Even if they did not necessarily oppose the war, they sought counseling and companionship of Vietnam rap groups inaugurated by VVAW long before the Veterans Administration recognized what was then called post-Vietnam syndrome, now PTSD. VVAW researched the effects of Agent Orange as well as other toxic defoliants sprayed over Vietnam countrysides, which contaminated Vietnamese civilians, soldiers, and U.S. troops alike. The original organizers and initial members of Vietnam Veterans of America, which among many other Vietnam War-oriented actions, sponsored the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C., were drawn from VVAW. The Vietnam Wall, designed by Maya Lin, is exactly what a war memorial ought to be, the names of the dead killed in the war. In this case, Americans. Perhaps someday it will be complete with surrounding memorials to enemy dead of Viet Cong and North Vietnamese Army, surrounded by a monument with the names of every Vietnamese woman, man, and child killed in the war. Perhaps also Cambodian and Laotian dead. And as epilogue, the most prominent spokesman for Vietnam Veterans Against the War was a U.S. Navy Swiftboat commander named John Forbes Carey, who became a member after he was discharged with a couple of Purple Hearts and a Silver Star. Carey emerged in the VVAW during the winter soldier testimonies of Vietnam vets tersely elaborating genocidal American policy through the narratives of the former soldiers who carried it out. When VVAW members protested and threw away their war medals in Washington, D.C. that spring of 1971, Kerry was one of two VVAW vets who spoke to Congress, in his case, the Senate, to which he later became a member. We were sent to Vietnam to kill communism, but we found instead we were killing women and children, Kerry wrote in a book about the VVAW demonstration. The USA, quote, unleashed the power of the greatest technology in the world against thatch huts and muddy paths, he wrote. In the process, we created a nation of refugees, bomb craters, amputees, orphans, widows, and prostitutes, and we gave new meaning to the words of the Roman historian Tacitus, where they made a desert, they called it peace. And that was John Kerry. 3 decades later, after serving as Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts and as a U.S. Senator, John Kerry campaigned for president of the USA in 2004 in opposition to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which were in revenge for 9/11. George W. Bush, known as Junior, was campaigning for a second term as president following an extremely contentious and never quite satisfactory installment as president by the Supreme Court as a result of confusing Florida ballots in 2000. His opponent in 2000 was Al Gore, a Vietnam veteran and future climatologist, who graciously acceded victory to Bush to avoid a grievous rupture of American political culture. Both Kerry and Bush were sons of privilege, Bush the son of a president. Kerry seemed to have accepted his privileged status as a debt and attempted to provide some payment by going to war and later through involvement in liberal democratic politics. Bush Jr. primarily manipulated his privilege as a way to dodge obligation and make money, at which he often failed, but was bailed out by influential friends of his family. Bush ads called Kerry a traitor because of his involvement with VVAW, a most vile form of campaigning. Kerry's prominence within the VVAW was especially called into play. Various conservative or right-wing media accused Kerry and his men, and that's a quote, VVAW, of having worked in behalf of the interests of North Vietnam, and that's a quote from the Washington Times. Even though Kerry played down his association with VVAW, it was certainly true that he and another Vietnam veteran senator, John McCain, who had been a prisoner of war after his Navy jet was shot down, were instrumental in the USA's rapprochement with Vietnam after the war. And Kerry helped smoke out the notoriously corrupt International BCCI Bank that many of his Senate colleagues, Republicans mostly, attempted to protect. Kerry essentially campaigned on his heroic war record as a swift boat commander. But a group that claimed to have also served aboard swift boats in Vietnam attempted to discredit him and attacked his subsequent involvement with VVAW, which one writer claimed made Kerry, quote, a traitor to his country and probably a sleeper agent for some totalitarian country, unquote. The term swift voting, as applied to Kerry, became a pejorative throughout the 2004 campaign. Swift voting has survived as a synonym for, quote, the nastiest of campaign smears and ugly, unprincipled slander. One commentator defined swift voting as a political trick of claiming to expose truth while in fact lying. The contention over Kerry's war record and anti-war activities during the 2004 campaign served mostly as a smokescreen to obscure Bush's choice to evade war service in Vietnam and the fact that, as a self-described war president in regard to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, he would justifiably have been classified a Vietnam War deserter for being AWOL, absent without leave, from his Texas Air National Guard unit for more than a year. After 30 days, AWOL becomes desertion. Perhaps too much emphasis was placed upon what Kerry and Bush did in a war that was, even in 2004, long past, yet it never quite disappears from the American consciousness. How each responded personally to the war had much to do with the type of character development necessary for a presumed war leader in the capacity of the presidency. Kerry, who staked his life at war and had far more clarity about war's costs and consequences, lost the 2004 election. The late Jonathan Schell pointed out the principal paradox of Kerry's candidacy. One might think that Kerry's good sense and bravery in opposing the Vietnam War three decades ago might stand him in good stead today. How many Americans think getting into Vietnam was a good idea? But just the opposite is the case. It is Kerry's bravery fighting the mistaken war, not his bravery as a veteran opposing it, that helps in his bid for the presidency. And that was Jonathan Schell. Not even the juxtaposition was any help. Kerry later served as Secretary of State to Barack Obama and was primarily responsible for the Iran nuclear deal that Donald Trump unwisely nullified, and as with the Paris Climate Accord, Trump also jettisoned, which should also likewise be reinstated. Perhaps John Kerry might yet be of assistance. This is Michael McCusker. Dylan Hauser Schalk is the engineer of this program. Disclosure. I was a member of Vietnam Veterans Against the War from 1968 to 1972, the equivalent to a four-year enlistment. I was a USMC combat correspondent in Vietnam 1966-67. The USMC celebrated its 245th birthday Tuesday, November 10th, Uncle Sam's misguided children. So, semper fi your family and friends with your own gung-ho, which actually means work together, from the Chinese, not the hard-charging mistranslation, which has been its common definition. Lock down and mask up on this 12th of Never Day. Help saves humanity by saving yourself. Oh!